All right, welcome back to Hash It Up. I have the great pleasure of being back online with Mr. Bob Burnett. I love talking to Bob. He always has good takes on things and can explain things really well. So thank you so much, Bob, for coming back on. Before you say hi, we're going to talk today about mining on ocean, which you have done for a while now. You're also an investor, or Barefoot Mining is, I'm not sure. I want to talk to you about miner signaling and how that works in general, and then connect that to the recent Bitcoin improvement proposal 110 that you guys signaled for. We're also going to talk a bit about AI and the public miner pivot. Hash Rate Up, hardware sales, advisory, hosting, and site brokerage. Find new and used ASIC deals through the website and the Telegram channel below. Make smarter decisions with Hash Rate Up. Before we head straight in, though, let's look at my screen. We're talking on the 4th of March. Hash price is sitting at 31, being dragged up by Bitcoin price being above 70K at the moment of recording this. We're looking at an estimated difficulty adjustment of near zero, and the previous swings were quite wild, which is... yeah, in turn, a result of the winter storm, but also the more broader AI pivot that keeps coming up currently because it's just so crazy in volume. I said a lot. Hi, Bob. How are you doing?
Hi, Jesse. Nice to see you.
I should also say we are recording at block 939266. And we are currently 17 blocks too slow. Do you look at this time chain calendar at all sometimes? Well, I like this metric how many blocks we are behind.
Yeah, it's I check every day, as you probably would imagine, being in the business. it's an important thing for me. Where the difficulty adjustment is, what the hash price is. Those are daily checkpoints for me.
Important metrics. Okay, cool. Let's get started with Ocean. Over the last couple months, I think, remind me, how long has Ocean been in operation now?
Actually, quite a while. We launched in November of 2023.
So it's been November 2023. So easily more than 12 months. How would you say has mining on ocean developed? I'm sure you didn't just jump in and send all your hash rate there. How have you approached hash rate growth on ocean from your fleet, and like where are you guys today with what you expected?
Well, I do appreciate you mentioning my affiliation with Ocean, and I just want to say exactly what it is. So I am on the board personally, and I have a fund called the Barefoot Bitcoin Fund that has an investment in Ocean. So I always want people to know, you know, what perspective I'm coming from. So I do my best to be unbiased, but I clearly have some bias, right? So so back at the beginning, I think I put about 20% of my hash rate on at the beginning. I actually mined the very first block ever won by Ocean.
Oh, nice.
Today we are well over 90% Ocean, and there are several reasons why. We get into more details of those later, but we frankly make more money on Ocean. So that's the first and foremost reason is it has been more profitable. And there's also an element which, you know, we're going to talk about more here, which is the way I look at it. Prior to using Ocean, I really wasn't a miner. I was a hasher. And that always bothered me. And I think now in today's environment, it becomes especially important that, you know, if you're in this business or associated with this business, I think you have to decide who you are and what you want to be, because if you want to be a hasher, that's okay. That basically means you're going to run your I like to call them compute centers sometimes too, but you run your center, and you're abdicating the role of mining to the pool, just in general. So the pool is going to run the node. The pool is going to manage their local mempool. The pool is going to create the block template. The pool is going to receive the Coinbase transaction, and they're going to pay you for the hash rate you provide. That's the way I look at it, right? And but in reality, if you're a hasher, you're really not connected to the Bitcoin network. You're connected to somebody else via proxy who is performing that work. But you're not picking the transactions that go in that block. And you aren't, and this maybe segues in, you're not signaling for protocol changes. When that's obviously a rare event, but you don't have a say in it. The only way you have a say in it is by moving to a different pool that maybe aligns with you, but you don't really have the control yourself.
Yeah. What you say, it's interesting. I mean, I had the Ocean guys on before. Whoever is interested can listen back to that as well, where we go into Ocean more deeply. But what's interesting to me and what I want to ask you is, you said, okay, you started out with 20% because the Ocean pool only pays out when they find blocks. It's not an FPPS pool, which pays out irrespective of them finding a block with the hash rate that they buy from the hasher or not. So you started with 20% and now you're at 90. So the first question is, why not 100? And just to explain that, right? So when Bob says a hasher and he wants to finally mine himself, that just means he wants to get away from a position, from a passive position where all you do is sell your hash rate to a pool who then does all the important bits with that hash rate, to a position where he has more control himself, where he has more control of the supply chain, essentially, and the stack, and can make decisions more autonomously with the hash rate that he does produce. First question, yeah, why not 100%? What's the variance like today versus back then? And then second, yeah, do you agree with my summary?
Yeah, I do. I do agree with your summary that we have a phrase inside Ocean. We say, you know, your hash, your choice. And so, you know, we could dive deeper into that if you want. But I think Ocean is sometimes misunderstood. I think it's even earlier today. I had some Twitter interaction with somebody who said, "Well, you're the anti-spam pool." Well, no, I think we're the minor choice pool. And, you know, because Ocean, by the way, has never not allowed a participant to mine whatever block they want. Now, we really haven't had many that put much spam in, but it doesn't reject any blocks. As long as their consensus is valid, Ocean doesn't filter. Ocean makes none of those choices. Now, why do I have, it's actually over 90, but it's not 100. So
okay.
I keep a small amount because I want to have a backup that if something happens with Ocean, I have a established relationship with a couple other pools. I have small amounts with a couple other pools. I also run studies on a regular basis. In fact, I mentioned that the economics say I make more money with Ocean. And so what happened was in June of 2024, or no, excuse me, in June of 2023, before Ocean started, I was starting to see, even from the other pools I was working with, a lot of variance in payout that didn't make sense to me. So I was typically using FPPS, full pay per share pools, right? And I was trying to understand why directing the same amount of hash power to pools with the same payout method, why was I seeing variance, a noticeable variance from month to month? So what I did was I said, well, you know, maybe it was variance in the machine performance or something in my network infrastructure where I had, you know, more latency in one than another. I was trying to eliminate that. So what I did was I took one container. So I had this, and I took 40 machines. And of those 40 machines, I dedicated 10 machines to four different pools. They were identical machines, identical firmware. They're on the same network. Everything was identical. And I just said, you know, I'm going to just measure payout. Started them all at the same time. I'm just going to say, how does the payout vary with time? And which ones were performing the best? So I started that before Ocean. So I ran that for about 6 months before Ocean came up. And then when Ocean came up, I replaced one of the four pools, the one I was most least likely to do business with and was performing the worst. I kicked them out of the study. I added Ocean to the study. So the study then began at, you know, at that point when Ocean started. I think the date is actually November 23rd of 2023 was the kickoff of Ocean. Amazingly, from that point, compared to the other three pools, the total payout from Ocean is about 18% better. Now that has declined with time. And so in the last year, it was about 6 or 8%. So the last 12-month period, it was like 6 or 8%. There are windows when it was equal or even slightly less where I could look at a 30 or 60 day window and Ocean might be less. And that might be a period where Ocean's luck was poor, right? Because as you mentioned, Ocean's payout system, which is called Tide, which is really a form of PPLNS, it means that we only get paid when blocks are won. And so especially when Ocean's hash rate was much smaller, it was, you know, sometimes a few hundred petahashes, it could be difficult. And that was why early I only had 20%, by the way, because I have bills to pay. And so if luck was bad in a given month, it was pretty difficult, especially when, like, in a month we were only expecting to win 6 or 8 blocks. Well, if you only won 5 and you were expecting 7, well, that's a pretty big variance, right? And it was a difficult part in terms of getting people into the pool. You know, I think that's for anybody starting. If you have dreams of starting a pool, and by the way, I encourage anybody, even though I own part of a pool, we need more pools. We need more options. We need the world to not be dominated by Foundry and Antpool. But it was very difficult. You know, now we're at a point where, you know, we're winning typically several a day. In fact, we had an amazing run of luck. We've won 6 blocks in the last 13 hours.
Ooh, nice.
Which with right now about 1% of global hash rate, a little over 1% of global hash rate is pretty amazing, right? Because the expected blocks in a day is about 150. And if you win 6, like you're at like 5x the expected block
wise. Yeah. You also, I mean, I try to explain these concepts more focused, like primary pool, secondary pool, all of that stuff. We should also mention Ocean is a primary pool. Like Ocean does not take the hash rate and sell it to anybody else who then needs to make money. So you're not paying somebody else's margin as well. But it's good to hear that variance has decreased. And I think, like you said, you know, there's going to be some periods where luck is great and the comparison it completely blows other pools out the water and vice versa. But the longer the time horizon is that you can look at, and maybe, I don't know, the first 3 to 6 months are probably irrelevant from a data standpoint. I don't know when the hash rate really kicked up as a share of the global network. But as you said, now you're seeing 4-5% above what other FPPS pools are paying. And most importantly, let me just add this thing at this one point, because I think you're going to have thoughts on this as well. It's not just about the rate at which ocean grows. It's the ratio between ocean's growth and the network growth, right? Which makes the total share of the network and how often we find blocks on a law of large numbers basis. Buying Bitcoin miners should be simple, safe, and fast. Altair technology delivers exactly that. Based in the US and shipping directly from St. Louis, Altair eliminates all the shady messaging groups, customs and tariffs issues, and makes sure Bitcoin miners get to you on time. Altair stocks leading commercial ASIC miners, efficient home units, and all the critical parts you need, backed by real inventory, real support, and a team of people that you can rely on and actually mines Bitcoin. Thank you so much, Altair Technology, for supporting the show. And without further ado, let's get back to it.
Absolutely, that's correct. And you know, we've had somewhat of a stall in global hash rate, as probably a lot of people listening to the pod know. Really flat since September. I'm predicting flat to negative growth through the whole year. So if Ocean can gain additional hash rate through this year, it will gain market share as a result. One of the things I wanted to note was FPPS. I was one of the very first people when Foundry came out that directed hash rate to Foundry, because I was initially very enamored by the consistency and the payout. And then, as I mentioned, other pools followed suit, and I was curious about the variance because it didn't make sense. Now what I understand about FPPS is that, yes, the beauty is, which is still true today, is you could sit here at the beginning of a month and knowing how much hash rate your operation has, you can pretty much predict what your revenue is going to be for the month. That's the good news, right? The bad news is you're paying something for that. That the FPPS provider, FPPS is really a form of insurance or hedging is really what it is, right? And there's a cost of that. There's a cost of doing that. And there's a risk taken by the FPPS provider that's material. Because they're taking a risk on their luck and they have to charge you for taking that risk. And the study that I've run essentially is telling you what that cost is. And we'll just use round numbers. I think it's probably costing you about 5% to have that. Now, I'm not telling you whether that's a good business decision or a bad business decision. That's up to each company or person to make for themselves. But that's what it costs you. And if you can deal with a little variance.
Is that including of the pool fee or excluding?
It's including the pool fee.
Okay.
Because my study, I tried to simplify it. And some people have been critical of my study because I published it a few times. Saying, well, you're not including luck or fees or whatever. I go, well, I'm a businessman. I care about what the payout is. Okay. So I'm just going to measure the payout. The other stuff doesn't matter. And if I run this study for a long enough period, like 2 years, which I did, that stuff starts factoring out, right? And by the way, if your luck is bad for 2 years, then there's something wrong with the way your pool is operating. Like you have a latency or some issue within your pool infrastructure that's causing you to have bad luck. So that's the way that I looked at it. So I think I'm not going to tell anybody what's right or wrong for their business. But if you're bottom line oriented, then Ocean, or probably another PPLNS type pool, is probably going to pay the best. If you need consistency, FPPS is going to be fine. Now, the one thing I will say as well, though, is I think FPPS pools have a difficult, will have a difficult time going forward. At some point, not necessarily next Tuesday or even several months from now or a year from now, but the formula for most FPPS pools, by the way, is they look at the past 144 blocks.
One day.
And they throw, yeah, one day. And they throw out the five lowest and the five best payouts from those blocks, and then they average the remaining. Okay. Now, one of the things that you'll notice, though, if you go deeper, is that the variance from the mean of the five worst is lower than the variance from the mean from the five best.
A lot.
Okay. It means that you get hurt more by the five being good ones being thrown out than by helped by the five bad ones being removed.
Yeah.
And that's where the margin, part of the margin problem comes in. Now, in a really low fee environment like we've been in for a while, it doesn't even matter that much. But if you look at the last 2 years, there have been periods where fees were a more substantial part of the minor payout, and that creates, you know, some of the variance. And the reason I'm taking you guys through this is that if we project, let's go forward 10 years, just I'll be a more dramatic out there. In 10 years, we'll go through three more halvings. So the at that point, we're well under one Bitcoin per block in subsidy. In fact, I think it's like 0.4, a little under 0.4. So fees are probably going to be a major portion of miner revenue at that point. So at that point, which block is won by a pool becomes very, very important. But in other words, if you win a block with high fees, you do really well. If you win a block with low fees, you'll do very poorly. And none of us know when we're going to win a block. The pool doesn't know. I don't know. None of us know. So it becomes very, very difficult for an FPPS pool because the distribution of payouts over that 144 blocks is going to start getting bigger and bigger. And if they go through periods where they're winning on the, they may even have better than normal luck in terms of the blocks that they win, but they win the wrong blocks on the lower half of the distribution. So I, you know, that doesn't mean FPPS is dead, but I think there'll probably have to be some modification to it for it to continue to exist. The payout formula will have to change, and the risk mitigation by the pool is going to have to change for that to survive.
That's another thing. It's highly, I mean, yes, you've just outlaid the formula, but it's not like pools put that out there and say, this is how we calculate it. You know, it's not a very transparent process. So there's no reason for us to believe that it will become a very transparent process. And so, yeah, at the end of the day, it's just, you know, the market sorting that out. Whatever pool has the worst luck combined with the smallest treasury disappears and the hash rate goes elsewhere. I want to draw your attention, Bob, to this before we get into the whole signaling debate. So I can already feel we're not going to cover all the topics that I mentioned in the beginning. So this is growth all time, no blocks. You can see the blocks there as well, but that's not relevant for now. So what I want to ask is, it feels like about a year ago that Tether announced, I think, that they were sending hash rate to Ocean as well. I would have expected a lot more growth. And I think this right here is, what is this? This is the winter storm, I'm assuming. So a lot of the hash rate went online during the winter storm, and it's now creeping back up. But does this match your expectation as an investor, or did you think it would grow more fast? Because I, to share my view, I would have expected that this whole Tether news would have kickstarted a lot more hash rate coming online from the public miners and all the big institutions. As sort of a go ahead, you know, Tether does its research. Yeah. So now we don't need to, let's just send a couple exahashes there, you know?
Well, the peak there, which is a little over 20 exahash, roughly in line with expectation. To be honest, I thought it would even be bigger than that by then. So if we went back to the beginning when I made the investment, I thought it would be bigger by now. And I do think that some of the announcements of some of the larger players associating themselves, like you mentioned, Tether, associating themselves with Ocean, certainly brought some hash rate to it. All you have to do is look at the Ocean, because Ocean, you always know who, almost always know who was part of mining the block. So you see nice hash directs some hash rate to Ocean at times. So that's in those numbers. You're right that the fallout, I can't disclose who, but one of the larger providers had some major damage to a site during the winter storm, like transformers, like big transformers that went out. And so that's a big part of that dip there. You're starting to see it starting to recover.
Creep up, yeah.
It's creeping back. But what was surprising was the resistance of the public miners to Ocean, because you would think, like, the numbers I showed you about payout level, like, hey, you make more money. Well, a couple things about the public miners. I'm speaking in generalities and about no specific miner. Number one, their resistance to variance is really strong. Like, I'm shocked at how much they're willing to trade off total payout for lack of variance. That was very, very surprising. I won't disclose it, but they have very specific numbers about how big the variance would be. Now, Ocean is at these current levels able to now get right in the neighborhood of where the expected variance of Ocean, now it's falling within their tolerance level. So if we're at like 2% of global hash rate, then the variance they would expect starts to fall off. Okay.
But isn't it?
So that's,
it doesn't make much sense to me, because as soon as a big miner says, hey, we'll send, I don't know, 10% of our hash rate there, all of a sudden, you know, hash rate share of the global network goes to 4% instead of 2. And the variance decreases by half.
Yeah. Well, I guess I don't want to be critical of them, because there's many factors in these decisions, but I'm just telling you what they tell us, right? So that's one thing. And I think we've basically got to that point where that's no longer. Another one was SOC compliance. Mm-hmm. So they have a lot of regulatory things. So Ocean, in our mind, it's kind of a silly thing, but we've gone through and we just over the last couple months have achieved SOC compliance, specifically so that we would be able to be attracted to them. And then the third thing is their contractual relationships with certain other pools. And their ability to move hash rate off of that. They have, again, I'm speaking in generalities, they have
commitments.
you know, they, yeah. And they get very attractive pricing, as I'm sure you can guess. You know, and, you know, Ocean is in a position where we can respond to some of that. And it's one of the beauties of the way we run the pool is we don't, you mentioned the big treasury, right? So we don't really take risk and we don't have to have a big treasury. We have roughly, we have a dozen people in the company and we have infrastructure we have to have, obviously, because we have to track shares and, you know, and do things like that. But we don't have quite the complexity in our infrastructure as some of the others. So we can compete on a cost basis with them as well. So I think this year, again, I can't speak to specifics, but I think this year you will see Ocean's hash rate grow by multiples. So the 10 to 20 exahashes you see here, let's just say it'll be, should be, I don't know if we'll get to a triple digit number, but I would expect to be up in the high single digit percentage of global hash rate at a, at on the low side this year.
Okay, interesting. Now, well, we, before time runs away from us, I want to definitely talk to you about the signaling topic. You guys just mined the first BIP 110 block of signaling for that change. Can you explain to the audience on a high level, and we can get into it more, what miner signaling is and why it's important and why you can do it on Ocean and not on, I don't know, another take your pick pool?
So inside Bitcoin, there is a mechanism on the rare occasions when forking opportunities present themselves. I guess I don't know if opportunity is the right word, but forking situations, you know, present themselves. So this happened with SegWit. It happened with Taproot. And so usually when these things come up, part of the process of determining whether or not that particular proposal will activate or not comes through miner signaling. And so what happens is when a block is constructed, there's a specific part of the block header, 4 bytes long, 32 bits, that is used for signaling this. And a specific, for each proposal, a specific bit within that sequence is used. You either keep it at zero if you are not in support of it, or you flip it to one if you are in support of it. Okay, so we're in a position right now where BIP 110, which is a soft fork proposal to tighten some of the consensus around data, that's the primary reason for it, and to we'll stay on what the signaling is. So only the people creating the block templates have the ability to make that decision. Okay, so now if you're with Foundry or Antpool or F2Pool, then they are making that decision for you. And right now they are signaling against, or they're not signaling for it. I guess I shouldn't say they're signaling against. They're not signaling for it would be the appropriate way for me to phrase that. We don't know what their long-term position is. And what we're looking for is, in this particular case, the proposal will activate if in one epoch, one 2016 block period, 55% of the blocks signal for it, then that will create the activation.
Okay.
If the, now it also, okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, I just want to make sure the activation doesn't mean the BIP is executed. So I'm gonna make that clear.
Correct. Correct. But what it does then is it says, hey, this is going to happen. And it takes two more epochs beyond that for it to actually begin being enforced. Okay, so at least that's the way this particular BIP is written. You could, when the BIP for SegWit or Taproot, they could have different activation levels. Like they had higher activation levels, actually. They were more like 90 or 95%. Mm-hmm. So this is a much lower threshold. And but by the way, the reason that this threshold was not set at like 90%, which is what some of the other ones was that we live in a world where if you take Foundry and Pool and F2 Pool, let's say as an example, you have 75% of all the blocks or greater are being produced by just three organizations. And so the lack of template diversity within the ecosystem creates a big problem here, because it essentially gives, if we have a higher activation point, it gives veto power to a single template creator. Like if we use 90%, even F2 Pool, or via BTC, or you know, organizations like that might be big enough to create what would in effect be a veto power on the protocol. And by the way, that's a bad on all of us within the ecosystem. Like the fact that we let such power get concentrated, it's the downfall of the, you know, all of the centralization, or one of the downfalls of all the centralization.
This episode is sponsored by Hashbranch, the easiest way to mine Bitcoin in the US. Sourcing hardware and rack space usually is a mess. Bad deal structures, misaligned incentives, and no visibility after deployment. I have placed tens of thousands of ASICs in partnership with Hashbranch. What I like most is that they cut through the noise. Fair pricing, aligned terms, and access to hosting that actually works. Use code HASHRATEUP100, visit hashbranch.com today to get $100 off of each miner that you order. I want to understand this better, because it goes exactly what you just said, goes exactly to this point, right? Just because this soft fork activates, right, doesn't mean my node at home automatically updates and has the changes in it and runs the new version, right? So at the end of the day, it's still right. The nodes who decide what the rules are. You just said if there is one epoch where 55% of the block templates signal for the change, that then, you know, if two more epochs, I think you said, pass, that it then activates. What does that actually mean when you say it activates and gets, it's starting to be enforced? What does that mean?
Okay. So in this particular case, this soft fork is a tightening of certain consensus rules, mainly around how much data can be included in a transaction. So what it means is that in that interim period, even though the soft fork has been activated, it's not enforced. So it means that blocks that come in from the network to a node running a BIP 110 version of a node enforcing BIP 110 during that period will still accept blocks that are invalid relative to the new consensus rules, but still valid for the old consensus rules. But after the activation point, they will reject blocks from non-BIP 110 compliant nodes. And this is where, and let's say your node, Jesse, stays with in the current form, okay? So what would happen would be you would have to make a decision about which, now you have let's say the worst case scenario, 55% of the network is producing BIP 110 blocks and 45% is producing, we'll call them old blocks, old consensus blocks. Now, your node would still, because BIP 110 is a tightening of consensus, when you see a BIP 110 block, it will still be valid to your node. But you'll also potentially get a block. Let's just say it's block 1 million, just to keep it simple. So it's block 1 million is happened to be the activation point. Well, you might see two block 1 millions, and you're going to have to decide which of those two to accept. And this is where concerns about a chain split come up. So what also happens is for the miners, they have to make the same, but I'm talking real miners, right? So the people creating templates and all that, they have to decide which of the two they're going to build their next block on. And that's where the rubber hits the road to a great degree, is because in my mind, this, if there is a split, it will exist for a very brief period of time, maybe a dozen or two blocks at most, and then a stronger chain will emerge from the two, and it will be obvious, you know, where the direction of the community is going to go. And I think the other one will fail, whatever one that is. And, you know, to be clear, I am in support of BIP 110. Obviously, I signal for it. But, and there are several reasons why. All of that said, a chain split would be catastrophic for Bitcoin. And so, to the degree I have control, and I have, you know, a tiny fraction of control of the network, I will not support a chain split. So, I'm signaling in part to tell the world, like, hey, I support this, but if it's not the will of the greater community, that's okay. I'm not right about everything, and what I want is not necessarily what everybody else wants, but I feel compelled to tell the world I support this and I think it's the best direction. But if 80% say no, well, and you know, we'll learn a lot from the nodes too, because the nodes are signaling too. Like a node is either upgraded. I should say upgraded. It's either it's changed to support BIP 110 or it hasn't. And I think we should all pay attention to these metrics. Right now, we're around 8 or 9% of the nodes are signaling in favor of it, and or in support of it. To my knowledge, as of this morning, I have produced the only block ever produced signaling for it. And if that's it, it's okay, you know. And I respect the will of the community, and I hope others respect that I'm just expressing my, my desire, and I'll try to explain why to anybody that wants to listen.
This is why we do shows like this, right? Because it's this, how do we make changes without a central arbiter of truth that sets the rules? And it's a long, arduous process. You know, and these conversations are part of that. So that's why they're important. And I think it warrants having you back and explaining exactly what your thoughts are. And I'm happy to play devil's advocate, because I am yet to have an opinion on it. And yeah, so, I mean, I think it's, look, what you're doing is super, super important, because as you said, you know, there are, only so many miners and very, 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 very many hashers out there, which results in a scenario where pools controlled by whoever, I mean, F2 pool and pool, these entities are 51% owned by the Chinese government, right? So, you know, take that for whatever you want. But I think it's important that these conversations happen and that you're out there. And you, what I always appreciate about the Barefoot Mining and yourself is that you're always very vocal and you're not afraid of the Twitter debate, which can be pseudonymous and very raw at times and very uneloquent. And it's not usually where productive conversations are had for the most part. So what I really appreciate about you is that you keep sticking your neck out there and saying, hey, this is my opinion. You know, come debate with me, because that's the only way people are able to make an opinion. And obviously Ocean is connected to Mechanic and Luke, who always same, you know, they have strong opinions. They're not afraid of voicing them. And that'll always bring along people who are of the opposite opinion. And that's how at the end of the day, we reach consensus and have debates at conferences and all of that. And so it's right. really, really important that these conversations happen. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure where I'm going with the comment. I just wanted to have said that.
I appreciate, well, first of all, thank you. You said some nice things and I appreciate that. I also say, like, within Ocean, here's what we're united with at Ocean. We're united in the fact that if it's your hash rate, it's your choice. That is, you know, and I think that's often gets misunderstood about Ocean. Like, it's your hash rate, it's your choice. We feel the most important thing for Bitcoin is for people to have a voice and use it, you know, because with all this hash rate, I mean, we showed the numbers. If Ocean has 1-2% of global hash rate, it means 98% of the hash rate is voting via proxy, right? Through these pools. And that's very unhealthy. So you know, that's one. Two, within Ocean, it said we don't agree on everything. And I think sometimes Luke and Mechanic, who are good friends of mine, who I respect tremendously, bright guys, but we don't agree on everything. And so even though we are all supportive of BIP 110, we actually have completely different reasons for supporting it, number one. And number two, there are people within, like Giacomo Zucco, who's part of the Ocean board and a prominent member of the community. He's actually anti-BIP 110. So... and vocally against it. Now, he's obviously a supporter of Ocean. He's a supporter of Knots. But, you know, it's hard sometimes, I think, for people to separate the people, like a Luke and Mechanic, from BIP 110, from Knots, and from Ocean. But those are all distinct things, and they shouldn't be lumped together. They're independent decisions.
Yeah, I think two points here before we have to close out, unfortunately. I think that the 98% that's not in Oceans, not going to Ocean, is not only a problem because it's voting by proxy, but it's also a problem because it, I think, can hinder consensus or debate happening at all. Because as soon as the pool goes out and says, hey, I'm in support of this, come join my pool if you are as well, they are taking risk, and they don't need to take that risk because there's less of a ethical approach to their business model, right? And then second of all, I think what gets people riled up often, especially online, is, and especially in the Bitcoin community, is they misunderstand your signaling and your being open with your opinion for you telling them that they should also be an opinion for it. I often get that feeling that people are often feel like they're being told what to think and what to do. And obviously Bitcoiners are very much averse to exactly that. Instead of understanding that, hey, you know, Ocean lets everything through. However, Ocean gives you, the miner, the option to withhold blocks or to not mine certain transactions. And it's just giving you more choice, but it's not really telling you what you should be doing or thinking.
Yes. Ironically, I think it, you know, it's, and it's a communication PR issue for Ocean to a certain degree, because I think it's been by some of its adversaries thought of as, well, you're in favor of censorship, or you're trying to dictate things to people. When in fact, the opposite is true. It's the only place where choice is available, and it is the rest of the ecosystem that is essentially being dictated to. Or actually, I use the term abdicate. So I think it's a, you know, it's kind of a big word, but you know, it's you have abdicated. If you mine with them, I'm not, or you hash with them, probably the best way to say it. If you hash with them, it's okay, but you have abdicated. You have taken your rights and given them to a third party, which in a way is, it's kind of a very un-Bitcoin thing to do, right? Like it's.
Yeah, but then I think that mining, out of all the sub-communities that there are in Bitcoin, mining is probably the least Bitcoinerish sub-community that there is. Because it's all about how can I make as many dollars per kilowatt hour? Because 70% of my cost, my OPEX, is denominated in dollars, and I need to make sure I make more than that to stay profitable. And if you like, what I'm saying is, if you talk to like the Lightning community, oftentimes you will feel the participants are, on average, a lot more aligned with what I would think the values of somebody who follows Bitcoin are, like independency, you know, separate money and state. And then, I mean, we haven't even talked about it. We wanted to talk about it, we didn't get to it. But I mean, look at all the public miners. You know, there's no, you know, Bitcoin needs to become the reserve currency of the world ethos at those companies. It's all about increasing shareholder value denominated in dollars. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I have one other component of that too, which is it is a community that has a lot of high time preference thinking versus low time preference thinking. And you know, I think that's where maybe I differ from a lot of people. Because even if I look at it economically, I think the path that I'm promoting is the path that I feel provides the best long-term economics for mining, both for the community and for me. It may not be the best in terms of the next block, though. And there's a lot of people within Bitcoin, even at the core dev level, by the way, it's where I have some differences with the core devs, is they're expecting a certain behavior, the behavior you describe, which is almost a greedy, pure economically motivated in the short term mentality. When I hope over time we can get some bigger, longer-term thinkers. And I think a lot of the plebs that mine think that way too. A lot of the people running one or two systems in a garage or a den, they're often a little more ethos-centric. They also often have a lot of longer-term horizons. And the rise of the public miner in somewhat paralleled the fall of the small miner, but I hope that's reversing. We can talk about that another time, though.
We will 100%. I need to look into BIP 110 more. I also want to do a couple, or maybe at least two episodes on how miner signaling works, because I need to understand it better. And then I will gladly have you back on, Bob, if you want to share more of your time with me. Yeah, to talk about the public miner piece, because I think over the next couple of months that's only going to increase. this pivot, the stagnation of hash rate, the decrease in hash rate. And so, yeah, would love to have you back then to talk about all of that. But for now, quickly shill your Bitcoin Boomers podcast as well, please.
Yeah, well, I have a podcast I do with Larry Lepard and Gary Leland, where it's called The Bitcoin Boomers. You can find it on YouTube or all the popular podcast channels. And if you like listening to old guys talk, it's probably the ideal place for you.
It's a very humble title for a podcast. I love it. Cool. Bob, thank you so much for sharing your time with me and the audience. I hope everybody learned something. I know I did. And that means it's always time well spent. I'll see you soon. Thank you so much. Cheers.